Oyez, oyez, oyez. Silence is commanded on pain of imprisonment while the Honorable Justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia are sitting. All persons having business with this court will draw near and give their attention. Any having pleas to enter or suits to prosecute, let them come forward and they shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth and this honorable court.
Please be seated. Welcome to this session of the Supreme Court of Virginia. The session is being broadcast on a live audio feed, which can be accessed through the Supreme Court of Virginia website. Ms. Clerk, please call the first case.
LaRocque versus City of Norfolk, W. Barry Montgomery, Appellants Counsel, Michael A. Beverly, Deputy City Attorney, Christopher McClellan, Assistant City Attorney, Appellees Counsel.
Counsel, you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice Goodwin and Justices of the Court. May it please the Court, my name is Wayne Barry Montgomery, and I represent Appellant Lila LaRocque in this matter. Mr. Chief Justice, may I remove my mask for purposes of argument?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Your Honor, we're asking this court to reverse an order of the Norfolk Circuit Court that was entered on December 11, 2020, refusing to implement a grievance panel's decision for my client, Ms. LaRocque, who successfully grieved her termination of employment. This case involves an important issue involving the application of the grievance process statute. Ms. LaRocque was terminated from her employment after 14 years. It was her first instance of any sort of discipline. She entered the grievance process, which took about a year. Actually, it took quite a while. During the grievance process, it was later learned that she accessed files using her city-issued login credentials. She accessed the files, however, and the city argues this in their brief in opposition. It's also stipulated in the joint record that she never used any of the files she accessed. She never copied them. They weren't used during the grievance process, but she did access the files and look at them. She won her grievance panel. The grievance panel actually went in her favor. There's three people on the panel. It was a unanimous decision. We then asked the city manager to implement the panel's decision, reinstating her to a work with back pay to her previous position. The city manager refused to do that, citing the accessing of the files and that she had not engaged in, did not have clean hands, and that she had not used the grievance procedure in a fair and honest way. We then petitioned the Norfolk Circuit Court asking them to implement the grievance panel's decision that the city manager's decision was improper. And after a trial and a hearing, which is part of the record in this case, the Norfolk Circuit Court refused to implement the grievance panel's decision, citing many of the things that were cited by the city manager. Assignment of error number one, we contend that the trial court erred when it refused to implement a valid and binding grievance panel decision. The trial court did not find, and Norfolk does not argue in their brief in opposition, that the decision of the grievance panel itself
but
or the
which
process.
Which body has, counsel, which body has the authority to issue a reinstatement order, the grievance panel or the court?
The grievance panel, Your Honor, and that's by statute under 15.2, 1507.
But the panel can't enforce it.
Exactly. They have the power to issue a final and binding decision, and the statute says that the decision of the panel, not the court, is final and binding. But of course, to enforce, have any sort of enforcement power, we have to go through the court to do that.
Well, at that point, you're looking to a chancellor to use an equitable remedy to enforce a reinstatement order, which is itself a statutorized chancery practice remedy. So why wouldn't the chancellor have the discretion to consider whether or not change circumstances or anything else within the equitable power of the court?
Because it's not authorized by the statute. And if you look at the end of the statute, I saw this just the other day looking at it, under subsection 11 of the statute, dealing with implementation of the final hearing decision, it states that either party may petition the court having jurisdiction in which the grievant is employed for an order requiring implementation of the hearing decision. And the Department of Environmental Quality case simply states that the court has the power either to implement or refuse to implement the decision. They can't modify the decision of the panel or
so
change it.
So what would the trial judge do here? Order the chancellor in this case, order a reinstatement, and then the very next day the employers say, all right, fine, you can do that, but she's fired today because of the later event. Is that what you want that trial judge to have done?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because what the effect here, what the city gets to do is circumvent an important statutory right of a state and local government employee. They have the right that no other private employer that I'm aware of has a right to in Virginia, unless it's a private procedure by that employer. They have a right to have a panel made up of a one member that they get to choose, another member chosen by the city, and a third party, usually an attorney, a three-person panel, decide whether or not the action of management is proper. And importantly, they can either reverse the decision completely or order a different form of discipline. And they could have done that here.
I follow you there, and I think it's a great argument. But that argument seems to be really tailored to the merits of a case as opposed to the enforcement of a remedy. So in Title VII and the Equal Pay Act, all of the ordinary, you know, employer, you do something wrong and the employee is reinstated by the judiciary, that reinstatement order is an exercise of a statutory power that is with equitable discretion baked into it because it's an equitable remedy that's been codified. So why is it wrong for the court in this instance to say, you know what, of course, I don't have any problem with the original panel decision, but I'm being asked to enforce it. And the circumstances have wildly changed, and there's no point to this. So the person asking me to enforce it has lost the equitable standing. So that's the argument of the trial court. That's the argument of the city. But I don't see any authority from any of our cases addressing that directly.
Exactly, and I was unable to find a case directly on point. It seems to be an issue of first impression, if you will, under these specific circumstances that we have here before us today. However, the court has the discretion to only implement or not implement, and that's what the decision was in Engle versus Overton and Zika versus Hampton. A little bit different here. You weren't dealing so much with post or conduct by the grievant that occurred during the grievance panel process. But that was actually a decision where the grievance panel decided to order additional remedies, if you will. They said reinstate the person and give them a different job and do promotions and things of that nature. But what you have here, Your Honors, is a case where if the court says, okay, the grievance panel decision is fine, but what we're going to do is we saw something that the grievant did during the grievance process. Now, it wasn't considered by the panel. The panel's decision itself was not tainted or affected in any way by her looking at these files and not doing anything with them.
Suppose, change a wild hypothetical. Suppose she committed a felony and is now in prison after receiving a favorable grievance decision, but before the court is being asked to enforce it. The court wouldn't say, okay, well, I'm still going to order that you are now back employed because I don't have any power other than to say you won your grievance procedure.
Well, in that scenario, Your Honor, if she's a convicted felon, she would not be qualified for the position herself. We don't have that here. She's qualified for the position. In that example, let's say she was a convicted felon and she couldn't hold the job that she held previous to being fired. She wins her grievance. She goes back to say, reinstate me. The city can say, you're no longer qualified for this position because of the conviction.
So you think the trial court would still have to order the reemployment of the convicted felon so that the employer can then say, guess what? She's not entitled to keep this job.
No, Your Honor, because that's a different scenario where she's no longer qualified for the position. And that's not what happened here. She was never adjudicated of anything. She stipulated that she accessed files. She was never adjudicated of any wrongdoing. That is what the grievance process is all about. If they were going to say, you looking at these files is a violation of our policy and procedure, she has a right to a grievance panel to decide that. They circumvented that right here by saying, we found out she accessed the files. She admits that she accessed them, weren't using the process. Therefore, we don't have to implement the grievance panel's decision that
but
she won
did
unanimously.
Did she admit that she accessed them?
Yes, she did. That's
in violation of the security protocols of the city?
Well, in her testimony, she admits she accessed them, no question. She said, I still had my credentials. Mr. Beverly asked her during the hearing, you understood that you're no longer an employee. And she actually said, well, I was a little fuzzy about that because the grievance panel's decision was not, we hadn't had a chance to have the hearing yet. But she definitely accessed the file. She never stated that she didn't. And they never contested the fact that she never used anything that she learned in the accessing the files or documents in the panel's decision. So I don't think she did anything to use the grievance process unfairly in that she didn't use any of that information.
And what she was... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What happened to her back pay award?
That was part of the grievance panel decision. That was not implemented by the court. So she lost out on reinstatement, and I think it was actually closer to 18 months of back pay that she was entitled to per the grievance panel's decision, which the city now does not have to pay because the court refused to implement the grievance panel's decision. And I know it seems like a circular argument, but I think the proper remedy here, as I argued to the trial court, was that, yes, she should be the panel's decision was valid. No one even argues that it wasn't. She should be reinstated. If the city then wants to say, now you're terminated, she could choose to invoke her right to grieve that decision. And the court actually seemed to wrestle with that, the trial court, and they actually posed the question to Mr. Beverly, and that's at JA page 81. Judge Fulton said, well, let me ask you this, Mr. Beverly, the facts of this case. If the court were to uphold the city manager's decision, where does Ms. LaRocque go to grieve that decision? What avenues of redress would she have? And I believe Mr. Beverly answered candidly, well, none, really. I guess the only redress would be to appeal that decision as we've done here today. But it leaves her without an avenue to challenge what the city's claiming that she did. If they find out during this 18-month grievance process that she did anything improper, and that's another thing, the city has a lot of different rules. One of them is that if you engage in conduct unbecoming a city employee, they can discipline you. They could find anything that she did that was unbecoming, decide that, well, because you did this, we don't have to implement the otherwise fair and valid grievance panel decision. It again deprives her of the right to exercise her statutory right to grieve that decision. And I think that's why here we do need clarification from your honors as to whether or not what the trial court did here was proper. The trial court seemed to wrestle with how to handle this exact situation. I think under our prior precedent and under the statutory scheme set up by the legislature, the court should only look at whether or not what the grievance panel did was consistent with law and policy. And all they did here was say, we overturned the decision, she's reinstated with back pay. There was no, and the decision, this panel did involve a lawyer. The decision didn't do anything other than reinstate her to employment and award back pay. So given that the grievance panel's decision itself was valid, there was nothing done during the process of the grievance that the grievance panel process itself was used incorrectly or with bad faith, the decision should have been enforced. Your Honors, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, if that's okay.
Yes, you have 3 minutes and 56 seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Honor, may I remove my mask for all?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices of the Court. May it please the Court, my name is Michael Beverly. I represent the City of Norfolk in this action. Imagine preparing for an exam like the bar exam. Imagine someone hacking into the Virginia State Bar Exam's database, looking at the upcoming bar exam questions and not copying those answers. But now imagine to this dismay on the date of the exam, they're unable to use any of the information that they access in hacking into the system. And then the bar discovers that after the exam is given, that they've hacked into the exam, but before the examination is scored. Nonetheless, she takes the exam and receives a passing score. That's the circumstances that we have here under this case. A decision to allow the passing score to stand would be inconsistent with law and policy. And that's
the back pay award, though, is a legal remedy. It's a damage award. Surely she's entitled to that, notwithstanding the chancellor's discretion to not enforce a statutorized equitable remedy like reinstatement, right?
The entire process that is set up under 15.2-1507 is a process that wherein it provides that litigants will come into the process in a fair and honest way. If we look at 15.2-1507A7, it specifically states that failure of either party to comply with all substantial procedural requirements of the grievance procedure, including the panel hearing without just cause, shall result in a decision in favor of the other party on any grievable issue. And that would, Your Honor, I would suggest that that would include an award of back pay, as well as an award, an equitable award of reinstatement into one's position. And so we see this kind of concept and notion of clean hands built in and baked into 15.2-1507. It's built into the concept, into the statute itself. And that was part of the application of the process that the Circuit Court applied in this particular instance.
What should we do with the holding of Department of Environmental Quality versus Wright, which seems to say that the Circuit Court cannot invoke its broad equitable powers to arrive at a decision that the court thinks is fair? It may only implement. Here the court said, useless act, unclean hands, I'm not going to implement the decision. It seems that that case would say that the court cannot do that. Help me with that case.
Certainly, Your Honor. Under 15.2-1507, under the it's very clear that under the very last part of that statute that it provides that the court is limited to examining whether or not the decision of the panel is consistent with law and policy.
Mm-hmm.
It does not expressly state what, with regards to the law, it does not expressly state what parts of the law. It doesn't say a law that has been adjudicated, does not state with regards to equitable law, does not state to whether it's the law of damages, actions of the damages. It just says consistent with the law or policy. And here we have, and as the city has argued all the way up, not only is it not only were her actions inconsistent, was the decision inconsistent with the law from an equitable standpoint, but it was also inconsistent with policy, with the stated policies of the city of
Norfolk. Under the grievance procedure, shouldn't that in the first instance be a decision made by another grievance panel, whether this is a terminable offense, whether this is an offense that would preclude one from being hired in the first place? Shouldn't that decision under this grievance procedure have been made by another grievance panel?
No, because the process, as I indicated, under 15.2-1507A7 says failure of either party to comply with all substantial requirements of the grievance procedure, including the panel hearing without just cause, shall result in a decision in favor of the other party. And so here, where you have someone during the process, admittedly in preparation for the process, unlawfully accessing and hacking the city system to use her credential, to unlawfully use her credentials to gain information in preparation thereof, that's a failure of her to comply with the substantial procedural requirement of the grievance process. And under 15.2-1507, which is the law that the decision has to be consistent with, it shall cause a result in a decision in favor of the other party.
But isn't that the grievance panel's call, whether or not that kind of misconduct was going on during their proceeding?
The grievance panel, under the facts on the record of this case, did not have the opportunity to make that call, and that's why under this case, the statutory provisions under 15.2-1507 provide that the city manager can evaluate the situation and make a decision as to whether or not to implement the decision if the city manager finds that the decision is inconsistent with law and policy, which the city manager did on this record. And then on appeal to the circuit court, the circuit court judge is tasked with essentially deciding the propriety of that decision, whether or not it was proper for that decision consistent with law and policy.
Well, the language that you've cited from 7A seems to apply to a step in the grievance procedure itself. The last sentence of that section being such written notification, that being the notification that someone has not complied, shall be made to the CAO or his designee. So 7A seems to be a step in the grievance procedure itself prior to the decision and the appeal to the circuit court. What am I missing?
Certainly, it does apply to a step in the grievance procedure. I raised the point of 15.2-1507A7 for the premise of that this idea and this notion of the doctrine of clean hands is built into is not a doctrine that's foreign to the code. It is, and such that the as counsel has argued in their reply brief for the first time, for the first time before this court and before any court, that equitable principles should not be should not apply to a purely legal right. And I would just point out to the members of the court that that was an argument that was never raised in an opening brief. It was never raised with the circuit court, and it was raised for the first time in a reply brief, which this court has stated is invalid under Palmer versus Atlantic Coast Pipeline 293.
But shouldn't there be a distinction drawn between a circuit judge on an appeal of a grievance panel decision exercising unauthorized discretion to second guess the panel's decision based on equitable policy or whatever amorphous principles? And that scenario distinguished from, no, I'm not going to, this is the judge speaking, I'm not going to affect at all the original decision. It appears to be within the scope of the statutory power of the grievance panel. But I'm being asked to enforce it, and I'm not going to because it's a chancery decision and I have equitable doctrines that I'm relying upon. Isn't that the problem with our cases? We don't seem to have any cases on that latter category of questions.
We don't seem to have any cases. There are no cases addressing this proposition. I would submit to the court that that, as I gave the example at the very beginning of this case, this is someone who unlawfully, without authorization, short-circuited the process and did not proceed in the process in a fair manner. And that is what those equitable principles are based on, is that litigants are to come into the litigation fairly.
But would the equitable defenses apply to the back pay claim, which is often, or most often, I think, in the courts described as a legal remedy, a damage remedy, as opposed to a reinstatement order, which is a statutory codification of an equitable remedy?
Absolutely, it would apply, and absolutely it would apply because, as I indicated, the code speaks to the inconsistency with law. It doesn't speak to whether or not it's law of damages or law of equity. It speaks to inconsistency with law. I would point out that with regards to, in this particular case, as we indicated, it not only was it inconsistent with the law under the Doctrine of Clean Hands, it's inconsistent with the policy of the city with regards to theft, conduct unbecoming, serious neglect of duty, all violations, all things that one is presumed not to engage in during the grievance process under the city's grievance policy and procedures.
Does the grievance policy indicate a penalty for all of the things you've just listed, this accessing of the system without authority? Do the standards of conduct of the city indicate what the penalty is for that, or might there be a range of penalties?
There could be a range of penalties, but all of those things fall under what is called Appendix C of the city's corrective action policy, which would include, which are subject to the most stiffest of discipline, up to and including termination.
Okay, so if she had been allowed to grieve it, a grievance panel may have looked at it and said, yes, she did all of these things, she should not have done this, and we're going to put her on the street for 10 days.
On this record, she did grieve it. She filed a second grievance seeking implementation, and that's in the record, seeking implementation and that's where she first, it was in that second grievance is where she made the first admission that she accessed these documents without authority.
So, I'm sorry, I missed that in the record. There are two grievances, one over that the original panel said put her back.
Yes.
And then there's a second grievance where?
Yes, Your Honor. When Ms., and that's at Joint Appendix, you can find that in the Joint Appendix at page 27. And in the Joint Appendix, and Ms. LaRock filed that second grievance after the city manager refused to implement the decision. After she got notification of the city manager's decision to refuse to implement the decision, she filed a second grievance, and that's at Joint Appendix.
And what was the resolution of that?
On this record, there has been no resolution of that grievance.
Is it still pending?
On this record, yes, Your Honor.
May I ask you this? The statute says the decision of the grievance panel shall be binding and be consistent with the provisions of law and written policy. So, and then the manager is looking at the decision of the grievance panel, and the circuit court's supposed to look at the decision of the grievance panel. But here, what we're doing is we're looking at the actions of the grievant. So we seem to sidestep what the statute has in mind, which is grievance panel has to be consistent with law and policy. City manager is looking at that. Circuit court is looking at that. But here we're looking elsewhere, which is what the city employee did. That seems to be a completely separate problem that doesn't even fall within the scope of the statute.
We're not looking at a completely separate problem. We're looking at the decision itself. The decision presumes that the litigants engaged fairly in the process.
Well, tell me this. What advantage did she gain? So suppose she found some secret memorandum that undermined the city's disciplinary. Maybe there was a dissent within the city with some folks saying she should be reinstated and others saying, no, we need to discipline. And then she brings that out at the hearing saying the city itself is divided. What advantage did she gain at the hearing from this access?
The advantage that she gained is that she was terminated for allegedly forging the signature of a department director. That is a serious violation. It is not only would it be something that's a violation of city policy, it would also be something that is criminally illegal. And in that allegation, part of her credibility is at stake.
You have to be a little careful there because she won that point.
She did win that point, but to answer Your Honor's question, if the panel is aware that she unlawfully, without authorization, accessed in excess of 300 files on three separate dates, three separate occasions, that will impact her credibility. And at the grievance, on this record, at the grievance panel hearing, she was her only witness.
We're talking apples and oranges. We're talking about the underlying basis for the discipline, and then she does something new. So suppose there's a grievance because she's showing up late. So we're going to address that. What should we do with that? She's grieving it. Meanwhile, this hypothetical employee mouths off to a manager as disrespectful. That's a separate ground of grievance that happens after, and we're saying she had some unfair edge because at the hearing she could have been impeached with this obnoxious, statement or whatever. But that's a completely different action that would be the basis for a separate grievance, right?
Under your facts, that would be a completely separate. Under your facts, there is no failure to engage in the process in an unfair manner in the same way that we have here.
I'm still trying to figure out how the process itself was infected by these new allegations. I completely concede they could be a ground for separate discipline, but again, what unfair advantage did she get? I'm missing that.
And I have 40 seconds. And so
no, you don't. You've gone over about 40 seconds. But please answer his question.
Okay.
And then I'll stop.
Certainly.
And we've got another question, too. But go ahead.
Okay.
Finish that one first.
Certainly. Ms. LaRocque corrupted the process. The process presumes that all litigants will come into that litigation fairly. Her credibility was at issue. She was the only, on this record, she was the only witness in her grievance hearing. And as I indicated, her grievance hearing was predicated on her ability to come in a credible manner. And the ability we don't know whether or not her unlawfully accessing this information, what impact that would or would not have had on this process, because in fact, that information was never allowed to be presented, and it could have very well have impacted her credibility to the point that she was unbelievable. Whether or not she actually used the substantive documents in her favor that she accessed.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
When you were asked about the second grievance, you indicated twice, quote, on this record, end quote. I want to first of all commend you for recognizing that we would typically be looking only at the four corners of a record. However, we are able to take judicial notice of the public records of the City of Norfolk or any other government. So first of all, are the reporting or the record of that particular second grievance, is that confidential or is that something that is available for someone to access?
Because it is a personnel record, it is confidential. All personnel records of the City of Norfolk are confidential and not subject to public disclosure.
Okay.
But is it confidential whether or not that proceeding has come to closure or not, irrespective of what the result was or anything else?
That would not be confidential whether or not that proceeding has come to closure.
It has. And is it confidential what the who prevailed? Let me ask you this. Let me rephrase that. Is the complainant, the grievant, capable of breaking that confidentiality if she or her counsel chose to?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
You have 3 minutes and 56 seconds for rebuttal.
Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
In light of my last question, if you want to choose to speak to that, I would encourage you to do so, but not require you to do so.
I would be happy to do so, Your Honor. I would tell the court I was not involved in that second grievance process. I can also tell that while the matter has come to closure, she's still not employed by the City of Norfolk, so she was not successful in that attempted second grievance after the case in which we're here today.
So does that moot the reinstatement aspect of our case, not the back pay aspect, but the reinstatement aspect? We have a second grievance, and it was unsuccessful to her. She's obviously trying to be exonerated of whatever happened when she accessed these files.
No, Your Honor, I believe that was denied because she was considered not to be an employee. She had nothing to grieve because that's my understanding of what happened. But again, I wasn't privy to the.
Okay, that's a great point. Let's follow the logic of that. Okay. So. But under your argument, I think, and please correct me if I'm mischaracterizing it, this thing that happened after the first termination needs to go back because that needs to be subject to its own little grievance procedure. That's the way this process works. Well, she had it, but there is no grievance procedure because she wasn't an employee at the time.
When she's reinstated, what would happen is if she's reinstated, they could discipline her and say, we found out about this conduct. We're now going to discipline you. At that point, once she's remade an employee, according to the grievance panel decision, once they decide, well, now, and the Judge Fulton kind of addressed this, once he decides, well, now we're going to fire you because of this conduct, that would trigger her statutory grievance rights, which is what which is the main reason why I think that the course that the court took here circumvents her statutory rights. And in looking at the statute, they have a separate provision with respect to local
governments.
Has he
answered your question, Justice Kelsey? So had the court implemented the panel's decision, she would have been back on the payroll,
yeah.
She would have been an employee, and she would have had a right to grieve the subsequent action with regard to the file access.
Absolutely.
How was that? The ruling was when she did it, she was not an employee.
No, I think when the grievance, never mind.
Answered that. We all have that question.
Well, that's an interesting point. And also,
was the ruling of the grievance panel, the second panel, you cannot grieve the action that was taken to not reinstate you because you were not an employee, or you cannot grieve because when you accessed the files, you were not an employee?
I believe it was because at the time she filed this attempted second grievance, she was not an employee. You can't. They said that, you know, the city manager did not implement the decision. You've gone to the circuit court now, and they haven't implemented it, and you're not an employee, so you have no right to grieve. It's more of a standing issue is what I would refer to it as.
So what happens if you win this case and you go to a grievance hearing and hurt and you make the argument, you know, appreciate being here. I'm glad I won the case to get me here, but guess what? You can't do anything between the time she was fired and the time I won my Supreme Court hearing reinstating her, because that middle ground, she was not an employee at law, in equity, under the statute, she was not an employee.
No, I think once she's reinstated per the panel decision, she is an employee, whether it's for a day or an hour or however long.
After the fact?
She's an employee when she's reinstated.
Sure, going forward. But the point is, what she did wrong, which was a violation of employee rules, she was not technically an employee. The reinstatement doesn't change the history of the case. It just goes forward and says, well, you're back an employee now.
Well, the reinstatement also, they awarded back pay from the day of her termination. So they decided that she should have been put back to her status quo ante, if you will.
Why wouldn't her argument be valid at the hearing, at the later hearing that you would win from us, by saying, okay, you say that I violated the employee rules. At the time you say I did that, okay, I did that. So what? I was not an employee. And the response that would be given is, well, this is, you know, good for the goose is good for the gander. You got a reinstatement order. But logically, that's not the right answer. Logically, no, you got reinstated, but that didn't make you an employee at the date you did this. It would be a great defense, it seems to me, that you would have, which would make the whole mockery of the whole thing.
No, well, I respectfully disagree, Justice Kelsey. I believe that once she's reinstated, that's when the rights to grieve, to fire to her from the city and her right to grieve that decision are reinstated. They can look to conduct and say, well, you engage in this activity, we're exercising our rights as your employer to terminate you. She can challenge it at that point, and the grievance panel has broad discretion. I think the equity, the equal powers that the court's been referencing are really vested with the grievance panel. That's the way the statutory scheme seems to read. And they have a separate section dealing with sheriff's or employees of sheriff's departments that say, in that, notwithstanding all the provisions of this chapter, the court can decide whether or not the decision of the panel or hearing officer was consistent with provisions of law and policy. They seem to carve out an exception that the court can invoke equity powers when reviewing the decision of a grievance panel for employee of a sheriff's department. They could have done that in the other section. They did not. I think that language speaks to the fact that the court's decision as to whether or not to implement should not involve broad equitable powers. That's really vested to the grievance panel. And she was, deprived of that right here. So for all of those reasons, Your Honors, we would ask that the court reinstate or enter an order reversing the Norfolk Circuit Court's decision and reinstating Ms. LaRoque consistent with the original grievance panel decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Please call the next case.